Hey, my name is Josh Oppenheimer, and today I am on a quest to find the answers to life's most challenging question. No, it's not who's going to win American Idol, or how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop, but what is cancer? If you're ready, then follow me as I crisscross the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland to find the answer. Before we begin, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am a high school student who is very interested in science and has taken up an internship at NIH for the summer. I am working in the Center for Cancer Research at the National Cancer Institute. But enough about me. We gotta find the answer to what is cancer. Now get ready, because here we go. Let's begin our search by figuring out some background information about cancer. And I'm going straight to the top. Dr. John Niederkuber, who is the director of the National Cancer Institute, a presidential appointed position, seems like the perfect person. Hello, Dr. Niederkuber. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Let's get right into it.
What got you into science, and then specifically cancer-related research?
In medical school, I was always very interested in the science behind medical problems, disease. And during the latter part of my medical school, I was able to work in a research laboratory between my junior and senior year of medical school. And again, that was further confirmation that I really liked science as well as clinical medicine. And I wanted to try to develop a career that would take me down the route of being a professor of medicine, a professor in medical school, where I could have both laboratory work and patient contact as well, and where I could do teaching.
The NCI is a big place that spends a lot of money on research, almost $5 billion a year. Where does all that money go?
A good portion of that $5 billion, $4.8 billion to be exact, comes in and is already committed to support scientists, researchers, outside the NCI, that is at major university research laboratories across the country. About 82% of our budget goes for funding of extramural, we call them extramural scientists, that is scientists based at our universities and colleges across the country.
As a surgeon, when a patient asks you what cancer is and why it is so deadly, how do you respond?
I usually start off by telling them how cancer is something we still don't know a lot about in terms of how it starts, how it progresses, and how it spreads throughout the body. That our goal is always to try to find it and diagnose it as early as we can, because the earlier we can diagnose it, the more chance we have of curing it or not having it come back. So basically, cancer is an abnormal growth of normal cells.
What do you wish more people understood about cancer?
I'm always struck by a friend of mine, a lung cancer specialist, and he was once asked the question, well, how many cigarettes can I smoke before it's a serious risk? And he immediately responded by saying one. So I want especially your audience to know that it's important to be smart and important to make good, sound decisions about your life and how you live your life in terms of exercise, diet, weight control, not using cigarettes, tobacco products, drugs, alcohol, things like that. All of those things will certainly be negative factors in your having a healthy life, not just cancer, but diseases as well.
What advice can you give students who are thinking about a career in cancer research?
Study hard, work hard. Those of you who live in this area should take advantage of the many programs at the NIH. I've recently had a student in my own laboratory. She spent the summer with me before she went to begin her year at Harvard, and she's back again this summer to spend another summer with me in my laboratory. So I think you have tremendous opportunities. I worry a lot, and I've said this many times, and I again stressed my concern that for reasons I don't clearly understand, our young people, don't seem as interested or as excited about science. And I worry about our country losing our status internationally in terms of science. And I'm hoping that we can do things at the NCI and the National Institutes of Health that will tell the story of opportunity and the excitement in ways that if you hear that story while you're in high school, you will be as excited as I am, and that you will want to explore the possibility of entering some aspect of this field. There are many, many things you can do with a background in medicine or a background in medicine and science. There are all kinds of career opportunities for you, very exciting career opportunities. So I'd encourage you to do that.
And finally, do you see any exciting frontiers in cancer research?
Well, we're very excited by the work we are doing in understanding the genetic basis of cancer. So we're doing a lot of work, investing a lot of resources, doing a lot of work to look at what we call your germline genes, the DNA that you bring into life. And we're looking at that very carefully to identify the sites or regions that predict that you would have an increased risk, not just for cancer, but for other diseases, chronic diseases as well, arthritis, diabetes, so forth, even HIV. I'm very excited about the work that we're doing and where we're taking, first as a pilot study, patients with breast cancer, ovarian cancer, or lung cancer, and we're sequencing the genes in those tumors.
Wow, I think we're now ready to explore the campus and get into the specifics about cancer. Thanks again, Dr. Niederhuber. Now, let's head over to... Wait, look over there. It's Dr. Kathy Flanders and Dr. Sharon Glynn talking in the hallway. I'm sure they won't mind if we ask them a few questions. Hello, doctors. I'm here with a few of my friends, and we're trying to figure out what cancer really is. First off, where do you guys work?
Well, my name is Kathy Flanders. I'm a staff scientist, and I work in the Laboratory of Cancer Biology and Genetics at the NCI.
Okay, my name is Sharon Glynn, and I'm a cancer prevention fellow at the NCI. So, and I specifically work in the breast and prostate cancer group.
Nice answer, but now for the harder ones. What is cancer, and why does it make people so sick? Dr. Flanders, why don't you give it a try?
The basic problem is cells don't stop growing, but I think in every tissue, it's a little bit different. And, you know, it's hard to say that this one thing causes cancer and this is how we're going to fix it. It's really such a combination of lots of little different things that can go wrong. And it can be, you know, very tissue specific.
Dr. Glynn, do you have anything else to add?
Cancer, basically, in my own words, would be basically when you get unregulated growth of a healthy part of the body. And so what happens is that you have normal healthy cells and then somehow they become what we call dysregulated. And so they will grow uncontrollably, they won't listen to the body's signals because the body has a very tight process that it keeps control of itself. So generally when something gets out of control, the body will actually will signal to itself and tell it to stop. And either it will stop the growth or it'll, you know, it'll eliminate it altogether. But somehow cancer cells, they seem to just kind of skip this process by. Like depending on the cancer type, there's different kind of pathways that it'll follow. So like breast cancer, the primary tumor itself that develops in the breast, that wouldn't be what would kill the patient. Rather, it's the actual spread when it spreads to other parts of the body. Like if it spreads to the lungs and then it, you know, you have to think about organs that are vital for your survival. So you require your lungs for breathing. If it spreads to the brain, obviously you need your brain, you know, so depending on the type of cancer.
Now, what are you currently working on in your labs?
What I do is we have cohorts. The people have volunteered who are cancer patients. They've volunteered to enter into these studies. And so they give us here at the NCI, they give us permission to take a sample of their tumor. And they also then, you know, answer questions about their family history, their lifestyle, various different things like that. Then what I can do with that is I can profile their tumours and I can try and see what makes one tumour, take for example, what makes one patient respond to chemotherapy and another not. You know, what makes one person survive and another person not survive.
And finally, what technology aids you in your research?
I mean, I have an automated stainer that I can put 60 slides in, program it, set it up, and it does the tedious work and lets me, you know, frees me to do other things during the day. And then I have the fun part of going through and looking at the tissue sections under the microscope and trying to figure out what happened.
Amazing answers. We've learned a lot, but now we have to huff it over to Building 10, the largest on campus, where we have a meeting with Dr. Deborah Citron, a radiation oncologist. Thanks, Dr. Flanders and Dr. Glenn. So right now we're in Building 10, but I have no idea where to go. It is pretty cool, though, that there are patient rooms in one hall and labs in the next. I guess they really mean it when they say bench to bedside. Let me ask the information desk over there for directions. Excuse me, can you point me in the direction of Dr. Citron's office?
Make a right at the end of this hall, then another right, then one more. Or you can just turn around, she's standing right behind you.
Oh, Dr. Citron, thanks for meeting us. Dr. Citron, what college did you go to?
I went to North Carolina State University in Raleigh, North Carolina. Had a very wonderful time there. It's a great school.
What is the difference between a normal, healthy cell versus a cancerous one?
We don't completely understand all the differences, but we know that a lot of cancer cells tend to be more similar to very immature cell and immature cells in the body, and what we describe that as is being less differentiated. And so very often they're more like cells that you would see in an embryo or when an organ is just forming. And because of that, they have the ability to grow unchecked and can spiral out of control. They also can go to other parts of your body and start doing the same sorts of things in those areas.
Have you ever come across any major misconceptions about cancer?
One of the things that I hear a lot from patients is that they are convinced as soon as they're diagnosed with cancer that they're going to die. And I think that that comes from the fact that a lot of patients diagnosed 50 or 60 years ago didn't have a lot of treatment options, and the prognosis was much poorer for almost all patients who had any sort of cancer. Today we have a lot more effective treatments, and several diseases we can look at more as chronic diseases instead of cancer that is life-threatening and terminal in a very short order.
You're a clinician, right? What is a clinical trial, and have you ever worked on any before?
So a clinical trial takes volunteers who know what the test is about or what the protocol will be testing. And those volunteers are subjected to either a treatment or in some cases to a placebo, and they're followed for some period of time to see whether those treatments or placebos have any effect on whatever disease is being treated. So I have a clinical trial where I'm treating patients who have metastatic disease from a cancer, who have five or fewer sites of disease, and those metastatic sites are treated with radiation, very high doses over a very short period of time. The goal of this study is to see if we can treat patients who have just a few sites of metastatic disease and result in good control of those metastatic sites to where they will not grow and cause discomfort, and also to see if those patients live longer than patients with other sorts of metastatic disease.
One final question. What do you see as some of the most exciting frontiers and unanswered questions in cancer research?
Most of us hope that we can one day take a piece of a tumor, learn everything there is to know about it very quickly, and then give the patient the right drug based on that tumor's specific signature. That same technology, those same drugs, those targeted agents can be very useful for the same purposes with radiation to make the radiation work better.
Thanks so much for speaking with us today, Dr. Citron. But now we have to check out Dr. James Gulley. He's a clinician and works in the laboratory of tumor immunology and biology. He's on the 11th floor, so let's take the elevator. Hello, Dr. Gulley. Thanks for showing interest in our quest. Let's start off with what got you into science and brought you to NIH.
Well, I've always been interested in what makes things tick, how things work, both, you know, mechanical things, but then as, you know, I was looking into the human system, it obviously a lot more complicated. And as I began understanding or learning about how things work normally, it was fascinating to me to see how how cancer evolved and took this normal machinery and made something bad out of it, and how you could hopefully turn that back into being normal again.
Why did you pick to come here?
Yes, so NIH really is fascinating for several reasons. Number one, you have a lot of resources here. I don't just mean money. I mean dedicated, intelligent people that really are interested in figuring out what makes things work. They're here because they want to make a difference, and they're not here just to make money. Otherwise, they'd probably be in different jobs.
Now, what is a cancerous cell?
We have inbuilt into our cells stop signals so that when you get to a certain size, you stop growing. Cancer cells, for one reason or another, do not have that checkpoint. So they start to grow, and they continue to grow, and they disregard all the rules, and they make a mess of themselves. Just like if we didn't obey the no shoplifting, things would turn into mayhem pretty quickly. And that's what's happening on a cellular level. Now, obviously, to us as individuals, cancer is a growth that you can feel or see, or either see on the skin or see in a CT scan or of the body, special x-rays.
What does cancer do to someone's body?
Another good question. Various cancers do various things. There are cancers like leukemias that are cancers of the blood cells that go throughout the whole body and just kind of increase in number and can make the blood really thick, for instance, some of the leukemias, and you can have strokes from that. There are other cancers, what we call solid tumors, that grow large and cause pain or pressure in a certain area, or can go to vital organs and cause damage to those, such as the lung or the brain or the kidneys or the liver, and cause those organs not to work very well.
You're a clinician, just like Dr. Citrin. What are the different stages of a clinical trial?
The clinical trials basically are when you take a new drug or a new combination of drugs and test them in humans. Usually we refer to clinical trials as either being phase 1, phase 2, or phase 3. There are others too, but let's just stick with those for now. Phase 1 trials are the first time a drug has been tested in humans, or the first time a combination has been tested in humans, or if that drug has been tested before but you're now trying it a different way or a different method of giving it, either the route of administration. That would be considered a phase 1 trial. And the primary purpose of a phase 1 trial is to see, can you give this dose or the drug this way and not have too many side effects from it? Then there's the phase 2 study. This is a trial really designed to see, is there evidence that the drug is working? So the first one is kind of, can we give it safely in a small group of patients? The second one is, does it seem to work? And if it seems to work, then we can go into the bigger trial, the phase 3 trial, which is usually a comparative trial where you have the drug, the experimental treatment, versus a control arm, which is usually a standard treatment, and see which one is better.
And finally, do you have any advice for students who are considering a career in science?
My advice would be to study. Study hard. Learn as much as you can about everything, not just about science. Science is important. That is the foundation for a career here. But for instance, English is very important. You think, why English? Well, communication. If you can communicate effectively in writing, you're going to be a superstar in science.
Dr. Gulley, thanks so much for taking your time to speak with us. We're going to take a quick break and recap all that we have just learned. Thanks again, Dr. Gulley. I know we've learned a lot so far, so let's go over everything. From Dr. Flanders, we learned that cancer occurs when cells don't stop growing. Dr. Glynn mentioned that depending on the cancer and where it occurs, many different things can happen. Dr. Citrin pointed out that cancer cells resemble immature cells. And finally, Dr. Gulley defined the three phases of clinical trials and how at each phase, the number of participants increases. Now that we've summed those scientists up, let's meet a few more. Let's head back over to Building 10 and talk to Dr. Crystal Makel, chief of the Pediatric Oncology Branch. Don't worry, this time I brought a map. Hello, Dr. Makel. We were wondering if you wouldn't mind shedding some knowledge on pediatric oncology. First off, what are the different levels of doctors?
So a primary care doctor are those that are the front lines that most healthy people, if they need a doctor, they go to a primary care doctor. It can be a pediatrician for a young lady. It can be an obstetric gynecologist for an annual exam. It can be an internist if you're perhaps an older person. It can be a family practitioner. They're all in the front lines. If you then have a problem that requires more specialized care, then you're referred to a specialist. And so that is a secondary level. And you usually think of a place like NIH as being more of a tertiary, where you come for very, very specialized care.
In your perspective, what is cancer and how does the cancer spread?
Cancer is much more complex than that, because it's your own body that has turned and gone awry. And it's not the kind of thing that can happen very easily. So chances are that there are a lot of mistakes that your body makes all the time as its cells are dividing and its immune system develops, etc. But most mistakes don't matter. But once in a while, and this is all a statistical probability, a mistake happens that gives one part of your body the wrong signal. And that signal is one of inability to control its own growth, and yet it still retains the features of your own body. And so your body mistakenly doesn't recognize that it's a bad guy until it's too late. And it's hard to find the Achilles heel. We're always looking for the Achilles heel, that is the weak spot that the cancer cell has that your normal cells don't have. And it's never black and white. It's always a matter of degree. It's very much like Darwin, you know, if you've studied Darwin, this whole notion of survival of the fittest, it actually pertains very well to cancer, because you end up with a cell that kind of becomes very selfish and self-sustaining and starts to feed itself at the expense of others, and it becomes more fit than those around it, and it outgrows. And so you end up with a tumor that is growing more quickly and is healthier than the rest of the body. So cancer is really just a genetic mistake, in my mind, that results in an advantage to the cell that the rest of the body can't stop.
You know so much, Dr. Makel. What college did you go to?
I have a very unique pedigree for NIH. I like to use the word pedigree. I went to the University of Akron, which is part of a six-year medical program through the Northeastern Ohio University's College of Medicine. So my medical school was Northeastern Ohio University College of Medicine. The undergraduate portion was the University of Akron, and I got my bachelor's in medical degree in 6 years. Went straight through summers and everything.
Wow.
So it's an interesting program.
Yeah.
It's actually quite challenging. Its goal is to create primary care doctors. So in some ways I'm a black sheep, because here I am in a tertiary care center.
Can you offer any advice to us if we want to go into the field of science?
I think that everybody, regardless of whatever they want to be when they grow up, should be offered and seek out opportunities to explore science. Again, everybody's not going to be a scientist. Everybody's not going to be a physician, nor should they. But you know what? Science is really the act of investigating our world. And what's more intriguing than understanding the world around us, our bodies, our environment? It's near and dear to all of us to learn more about our world. And so really, science is really a matter of simply being curious about the world around you. And I think regardless of whatever you want to be when you grow up, there is some natural beauty that you can appreciate if you spend the time to learn about the world around you.
Dr. Makel, thanks so much for talking with us. Hey, I got a call coming in. Hello? Oh, hello, Dr. Hunter. Yes, we are trying to find the answer to what is cancer. You want to help us? Great, we'll be right over. See ya.
Okay, guys, that was Dr. Kent Hunter,
who works in the Laboratory of Cancer Biology and Genetics.
And he says that he may be able to help us. Let's go. Thanks again, Dr. Magel.
Boy, was she nice. Let's hop on the bus to get to 37, because it's pretty hot out here. Okay, we're here at Building 37. It's a lot smaller than Building 10, and I think Dr. Hunter's office is right down the hall. Here it is. Hello, Dr. Hunter. Thanks so much for speaking with us. I won't waste your time, so let's get right into cancer. What college did you go to?
I went to the Pennsylvania State University, Penn State. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, now we'll get into cancer. Is cancer scary? Should we be living in fear of cancer?
Well, I mean, yes, cancer can be scary. Cancer is a scary thing. Anything that's a life-threatening disease is scary. Should we be terrified of cancer? No, I don't think so. We should be careful. Just like we're careful with everything else, we should try to avoid situations that are avoidable that cause cancer. One of the things that I really think is important is people understand that exposure to carcinogens is really important. Smoking, for example, if we got people to stop smoking, that would solve a lot of the cancer, particularly lung cancer problems.
What are you currently working on?
So what my laboratory works on is investigating how inheritance affects whether or not tumors will spread or not. So in breast cancer, which is the particular cancer that I work with, but also most other cancers, it's generally not the primary tumor that actually is the proximal cause of death. It's when those tumors spread to other parts of the body. If the tumors stayed localized, most cases we'd be able to solve cancer by simply surgically resecting the tumor. But they spread, and we've been trying to understand why it spreads and how it spreads and what we can do about it.
And finally, why should a high school student even consider a career in cancer research?
It depends. I mean, for me, it's very exciting. I get to sit here every day and peel apart the onion of how metastasis is working, you know, how many layers there are. You know, there's a huge number of layers, but each day I feel that I'm getting more information. I'm helping to solve the puzzle, and that, for me, is very satisfying. It also appeals to my altruistic side, in which I'm attempting and trying to contribute to human health by developing more information and more knowledge about breast cancer metastasis.
Dr. Hunter, you've been amazing. I know it's getting late, but I've got one more scientist I want you to meet. Dr. Diane Palmieri is only one flight down, so let's take the stairs. Hello, Dr. Palmieri. My name is Josh Oppenheimer, and these are my friends. Dr. Hunter said you could help us understand cancer. So, what got you into science and made you want to work for NIH?
Actually, I wanted to be a scientist since I did my first science project in 7th grade, so I'm pretty much a science geek. The first time I did a science project and I had to generate a hypothesis, I did a whole genetic testing thing where I tested members of people's families and saw how inheritance patterns went on, and I was hooked from there on in, and I wanted to be a scientist. And I used to want to be a geneticist because I thought that was cool. That was the first thing I learned about in DNA and all that. It wasn't, I think, until I was probably applying to graduate school that I decided I wanted to do cancer research.
So then what pulled you to NIH?
I wanted to get some experience when I finished graduate school in the government and see what being a government scientist was like, because as a graduate student, you sort of understand what academics would be like and what a career as an academic scientist would be like, because they're the people that you work for and your mentors in graduate school. And you kind of have a feel for industry and the fact that you know how businesses are run just from being part of the world. But the government seemed a little more nebulous as to how it all took place because it wasn't an academic institution. So I wanted to come here after graduate school to do my postdoctoral fellowship just to see how the NIH worked and how the government worked.
Before coming to NIH, what college did you go to?
I went to Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York as an undergrad, and I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill as a graduate student. Go yeah. Tar Heels. Big Tar Heel fan.
How does a cancer cell arise?
Internal factors, I would count the biggest one as genetics. So, you know, everyone will tell you as sort of a buzz phrase, cancer is a genetic disease. Externally, there's obviously a lot of things that play into cancer, and probably the biggest and most well-known is cigarette smoking and lung cancer.
Is there any way a person can truly prevent cancer?
I don't think you can prevent cancer. People can do things in their lifestyle and in the course of their life to reduce their risk of getting cancer, but I don't think it's ever been proven you can actually prevent yourself from getting cancer.
What technology aids you in your research?
One thing we do is laser capture microdissection, and this is a laser that's hooked up to a microscope so that you can put a piece of tissue on a slide under the microscope, and you can use the laser to actually capture or zap the specific cells in that piece of tissue that you want and remove them so you can just experiment on them. So if you had, a lot of times you get biopsy samples from patients and they might only have a few tumor cells in them and they might have a lot of normal tissue because a biopsy punch is just a couple of millimeters of a needle that they stick into someone's tumor. And so you could grind the whole biopsy sample up and do experiments on it, but then you're mostly experimenting on normal tissue. And so by using the laser capture microdissection machine, you can actually pick the specific tumor cells out and avoid the normal tissue so you can concentrate on the tumor cells.
Thanks so much, Dr. Palmieri. I think it's time for another recap on the last three scientists. From Dr. Makel, we heard about the different levels of doctors. Primary care doctors are those who we see to get our annual checkups, and tertiary doctors, like Dr. Makel, are those we see if we need extra special attention. Dr. Hunter says that cancer is scary, and we should be aware of it, but not let it ruin our lives. And finally, Dr. Palmieri talked about a laser dissection microscope that cuts out specific cells. How cool! And that pretty much wraps it up. We have been to 8 scientists, including the director of the National Cancer Institute, and learned so much about cancer. I would like to thank Dr. Niederhuber, Dr. Flanders, Dr. Glynn, Dr. Citrin, Dr. Gully, Dr. Makel, Dr. Hunter, Dr. Palmieri, Dr. Bennett, and all those at the National Cancer Institute. For those of you who would like to learn more about these scientists, or just more about cancer, then log on to www.ccr.cancer.gov. From the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland, this is Josh Oppenheimer saying get out there and spread your newfound knowledge. See ya!